How do we stop plastic pollution in our water? Good morning, I'm Marianne Combs. You've probably heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, a gyre of plastic pollution caught in ocean currents that was first discovered more than 30 years ago. What you might not know is that if you were to sail through that patch, you probably wouldn't even notice it. That's because it consists primarily of very small pieces of plastic that have broken down over the years and are floating just beneath the surface. That's not good news. A growing body of research has found microscopic plastic pollution in our oceans and our lakes. A recent study of bottled drinking water found that the vast majority was contaminated with microplastics in the water. It's been found in tap water, too. To find out more about how plastic pollution is affecting our ecosystem and what can be done about it, we've invited two guests to join us this hour. Sherry Mason is a professor of chemistry at the State University of New York at Fredonia. Welcome, Sherry.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being
here. Feel free to call me Sam.
Sam. Got it. Thanks, Sherry. Or Sam. And we're also joined by Emily DeFrisco with the Plastic Pollution Coalition. Emily, thanks so much for being here with us.
Hello. Thank you.
Sam, you and your students, you've traveled the Great Lakes exploring and researching. You've taken fish out and cut them open and looked in their guts. What have you found?
Plastic. Everywhere we look, we find microplastics. The vast majority of what we're pulling out of the Great Lakes, whether it's in the rivers, it's in the lakes, it's in the fish, it's in bottled water, tap water, sea salt, beer. It's all microplastics. So these are things that are smaller than a millimeter in size.
So you can't see them with the naked eye, or could you if you really looked hard?
Once you kind of remove all of the natural detritus, the system that's kind of associated with it, yeah, you can see them. Obviously, with a microscope, it's a whole lot easier. But some of the particles are way too small to be seen with the naked eye.
Mm. So where is this plastic coming from? What are the biggest culprits?
Well, ultimately, it's coming from us, right? I mean, plastic is—it's a synthetic material, so you know, it comes from us. So we're the problem, but that also means that we're the solutions, right? As we look at our own life and how plastic makes its way into our lives and how we use it and ultimately lose it, that's where you can start thinking about where it comes from and how to tackle this problem.
But in terms of the plastics you're looking at, are you finding, is it more plastic beads? Is it more like the breakdown of plastic bags, microfibers?
Right, yeah. So, I mean, the vast majority of it are fragments, although microfibers are quickly becoming the most pervasive microplastic that we find in the external environment. Obviously, a few years ago, when our research first started, microbeads that become effectively banned in July of this year were a big component of it as well. And hopefully with that new legislation, they will become a smaller factor. But yeah, ultimately, it's coming from these plastics that they break down into these smaller and smaller bits. So it's the bags and the bottles. It's when we wash our clothes and you know, I mean, we live up north, we love fleece. I totally understand that and sympathize with it. But every time we're washing a single article of synthetic clothing, at a minimum, you know, 15,000 particles of microfibers are breaking off of that and making their way down the drain. They make their way through wastewater treatment plants. We've studied this and they end up getting deposited into our rivers that ultimately flow into our lakes, and we find them in the fish.
Mm. Emily, generally we throw our plastics in the trash or we recycle them. So how are they ending up in our lakes and oceans? Sam mentioned the laundry and washing of clothing, but what other ways are they getting into our water systems?
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we know that less than 8% of our plastic is recycled in the U.S. So the vast majority of the plastic that we use is ending up in our environment. 80% of ocean plastic pollution comes from land-based sources. So basically, you know, the plastic straws, the plastic cups, or the plastic water bottles you use, even if you put it in your recycling bin, it's most likely going to end up in a landfill or otherwise somehow in our environment. So that's why we really need to look at how we can reduce our use of plastics and refuse single-use plastic.
Wait a second. Let's walk through that a little bit. Because you say that even if you put it in your recycling bin, it's going to end up in the waterways?
Well, basically, plastic is coming from our land-based sources. Illegal dumping is one way that plastic waste enters the waterways, and of course, all our waterways are connected to oceans. But plastic, basically, it's getting less and less profitable to recycle plastic. So the vast majority, even if you put it in your recycling bin, it may end up in a landfill, or it may be shipped to another country such as China, even though China is now saying that they don't want our plastic anymore. So we'll be able, we're going to start seeing plastic around us more and more. It's not, there is no away. The plastic is ending up around us.
And what about the landfills? When we say that, well, we're throwing it away, we're putting it into a landfill, that should keep it from getting into the water?
Yeah, I mean, even in the landfill, it's still at risk of blowing out. And our landfills are becoming more and more full. And our landfills are still our environment. I mean, they're not these isolated places. They are in our environment. So it's just something that we all have to be aware of, that the plastic doesn't just go away. It's still there.
And Sam,
and plastic doesn't biodegrade. It photodegrades, which means it breaks into little pieces over time, which are, you know, end up being microplastics.
This hour, we're talking about plastic pollution in our water and the ramifications for human health and the environment. We'd love to hear from you. What are your concerns about plastic pollution? Have you changed your consumption habits to try to reduce your plastic waste? Call and share your story or with your question for either one of our guests. You can reach us at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or toll free at 1-800-242-2828. That's 1-800-242-2828. Sam, Emily was mentioning that plastic doesn't biodegrade. It photodegrades. It breaks down into smaller pieces. Tell me a little bit more about that. What does that mean as it continually gets smaller and smaller?
Yeah. And I'd like to touch on that landfill point, too.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind, because I don't know. I mean, I would really urge all of our listeners to go out and visit a local landfill, because I think, you know, part of the problem with plastic is that the trash, the waste is removed from our eyesight, right? Landfills are typically far removed from the people. They're behind barriers. I just actually took a class out there. We were driving up to the landfill. They're like, oh, look at that beautiful mountain. And I'm like, dude, that's not a mountain. That's trash. You know, but they put covering on top of it in order to keep it protected. But then as we drove up to it, you see all of the plastic. I mean, plastic is very lightweight, so it gets blown. So even if it makes its way to the landfill, it's so easy for it to be blown away. There's a lot of food that's associated with waste as well. And so there were all these seagulls and birds that feed off of the landfills, and they end up carrying that plastic miles away as they eat the food. So they'll find a piece of food, they'll carry it away so that they can get away from all the other birds and eat it. And then they end up depositing that plastic far removed. And then, as Emily pointed out, yes, plastic doesn't biodegrade. So biodegrade, right, means that there's organisms within the environment, whether it's soil or the water, that will feed on a material and then can return it back to its elemental state. Mineralize it is the scientific word for that. So a paper bag, 18 months, if it's sitting on the side of the road, right, in soil, within 18 months, it's completely returned to carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. It's completely returned to the soil. Plastic doesn't do that. There are very few, very, very few organisms that can use plastic as a food source. And so instead, what happens is that the sun causes the plastic to become more brittle, and the mechanical actions of waves and wind and cars will break them into these smaller and smaller pieces. But in terms of the chemistry, the components of that plastic have really undergone very, very little chemical change. So even as the plastic gets smaller and smaller and smaller, it's still plastic.
To play devil's advocate, then what is it? Just, you know, some people might say, well, it's just roughage. It's just going to pass right through you. No harm.
Well, that's not exactly true, because plastic isn't just the polymer. I mean, that's what we think of when we think of plastic. We think of the main component of it is these synthetic polymers. But you've got colorants, you have flame retardants, you have UV stabilizers, you have plasticizers. You have all these additives that are mixed into the plastic. And while they're mixed in, they're not chemically bound. And so it's really easy for them to migrate out. The most kind of infamous example of this is bisphenol A or BPA that was in the news news maybe 10 years ago, right? Because we were finding it in infant formula, right? So you take your baby bottle, you fill it with formula, you heat it up. And as you're heating up that bottle, the chemicals are leaching from the baby bottle into the infant formula that you're then going to feed to your child. And this has been shown not just with baby bottles, but soup cans and all sorts of other things. So these chemicals that are in the plastic will leach out into the environment and ultimately in the into us as part of that. But also, as the plastic is in the water, you know, the Great Lakes are kind of infamous. They're very well known for having this kind of industrial legacy. And there's all sorts of chemicals that are within the Great Lakes that will leach on or attach to, adsorb onto the surface of the plastic. And then each one of those pieces of plastic that we end up finding in the environment is basically like a little poison pill. It's carrying all of these chemicals, the chemicals that are within it from its manufacturer, the chemicals that are stuck onto the outside. It's carrying those into the food chain. And inside an organism, whether it's a fish or a human, it's much more favorable for those chemicals to move from that plastic into the organism. And then on top of that, actually, some of these plastics get so small that it's really easy for them to actually migrate across the gastrointestinal tract, be carried through our blood, and end up being deposited into our various organs. And we really don't understand fully what the impact of that is yet.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one thing that we need to touch on is that there's a lack of research in this area.
Yeah. You know, we've been studying this, for, as you pointed out, in the oceans for 30 years, but it started in the oceans and it started with big things, right? And you know, all of us can think about, you know, whales with their stomachs full of plastic bags, or the turtles with a straw up their nose, or birds with the six-pack ring, right, across around their necks, happy feet kind of thing. And that's where it started. But, you know, kind of as science progresses, we're able to go to smaller and smaller levels. And it takes time. It's a very methodical thing, right? So until, like, you know that it's present, you can't then ask what the next question is. And so as we're just starting to really have an appreciation of fullness, appreciation of what this, of the prominence and the prevalence of plastics and microplastics and now nanoplastics in the environment, now we're just starting to kind of get to those questions of, okay, well, what is the impact?
We're talking this hour about plastic pollution in our water and the various ways in which plastic breaks down and enters different water systems, whether it's the lakes, the oceans, our drinking water even. And we're taking your calls. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can reach us at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000 or toll free at 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to the phones. We've got Kelly on the line from Tonka Bay. Kelly, welcome to the show. Kelly, are you there? Oh, Kelly, are you there now?
I am here.
Hey, thanks so much for joining the conversation. What's your comment or question?
I just recently bought some plant-based biodegradable doggy waste bags. And I was wondering, was that in vain? Because in landfills, if they don't get oxygen, they might not biodegrade. That's kind of my question. Was that a good purchase or no?
All right. Emily DeFrisco, can you answer his question?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably a step in the right direction. I would be curious to know more if it's what type of bioplastic it is. Unfortunately, and Sam can speak to this probably as well, you know, bio-based plastics act like normal plastics in the environment. They kind of act the exact same way. They're just made from plants instead of from fossil fuels. So probably a step in the right direction, but also going to kind of act the same as regular plastic in the landfill.
Wait, now, Sam, at the micro, as it's breaking down into the smaller levels, is it less of a threat then or the same threat?
As he points out, if you put it in a landfill, it's not going to biodegrade. There's no oxygen and very little degradation happens in a landfill. So they're compostable probably in you know, the intention probably of those is that you put it in your compost bin as opposed to putting it in a landfill. And the ultimate question is, you know, kind of what is the bioplastic, because some things are kind of greenwashed. They're not truly compostable unless they're in an industrial composting facility. And so we would really have to kind of probably know more about the material itself. But if it is plant-based, and you know, if if you're putting it in your compost bin and it's truly plant-based, then it should actually be compostable. And then the impacts it would be having would not be the same as synthetic plastics. But it, ultimately, it's what is the source of the material. Some bioplastics are they're made from, for example, like landfill gas, natural gas, and they're considered bioplastics because it's a closed carbon loop cycle. But those are going to have the same impact on the environment as any other synthetic plastic. But if it's truly a plant-based, then it would be a better, definitely a step in the right direction. But you don't want to be putting it in your landfill. You want to be putting it in some kind of a compost bin.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Bonnie on the line in Brooklyn Center. Bonnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's your comment or question?
So I'm wondering, now that all of this microplastic is in the water, you know, this is sort of a two-part. Is there anything we can do to extract it or clean it out in an industrial fashion? Or are we kind of stuck where we are now and we need to do our best to keep from getting into our water more? And second part is, what can I do as a resident if I know it's in the tap water? Is there a filtration system or something that I can buy?
Okay, Bonnie, it sounds like you're breaking up. Let's try and get the answers for you. Which one of you wants to take this on? Sam, Emily?
I would be happy to answer it.
Sure, go for it.
Yeah, so, you know, we know that microplastics are showing up in our drinking water, but we absolutely don't want to move people toward more plastic bottled water. We believe that is just absolutely not the solution. That's just contributing to the problem. So if you are able to filter your water, we would say, yes, get a water filter, whether it's in home or, you know, even just in your fridge or whatever is available to you. Absolutely filter your water. We can't promise that that's going to, you know, take out all the plastic microfibers and microplastics, but absolutely filter your water. And then really we need to work on source reduction, which is just stopping creating so much plastic in the first place and stop using so much plastic in the first place. And just take the first step by bringing your own water bottle with you, saying no to plastic straws in your drink and no to plastic bags at the grocery store. Bring your own bag whenever you can.
Emily, there have been some efforts made to ban plastic bags in certain cities, townships, et cetera. How is that going? Are you seeing much progress in that nationwide or pushback?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's going very well. And we're starting to see, there was a news story this morning out of the UK. You know, England has put a fee on their plastic bags, and they are seeing a dramatic reduction in plastic bag pieces in their environment. So we know that it does work. So we encourage everyone, you know, once you start refusing single-use plastic in your own life, you know, support local bans in your own community to reduce plastic pollution. Support plastic bag bans and fees. And I think that it absolutely will make a difference in our environment.
What about the argument from small businesses that if, you know, switching away from plastic bags to paper bags or other bags is too expensive for them to bear?
Yeah, well, you know, we lived without plastic for quite some time. You know, plastic was only a recent invention. So we need to just kind of return to the ways that we used to do things. We don't need all this disposability. We need to return to kind of a time of stewardship. And it sounds quite old-fashioned, but we need to return to, you know, reuse over disposability. And it might take some, you know, getting used to, but we believe we can get there. Mm.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Elizabeth on the line in Minneapolis. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call today.
Sure thing.
I'm a Costco shopper, and we're in a very limited budget, so we really need to buy in bulk for our family. And it just drives me crazy that they wrap everything in plastic. When you buy two tubes of toothpaste, wrap it together. Or that company is so overuses plastic. But how can we make companies like that accountable to their what they use plastic for? And my idea is that, can we bring the plastic back to them in bags? So here's the plastic that you wrap.
Absolutely. Love it.
It.
Yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, Emily?
There's a movement right now to just take out, you know, you're shopping in the supermarket. You don't like that your produce is wrapped in plastic and layers of plastic. take it off right there at the cashier and hand it back to them and complain and say, I want to buy this cauliflower, but it is wrapped in layers and layers of plastic and I don't need this. I don't need it. I don't want it. And this is polluting the environment. So absolutely make your voice heard, speak to the manager and do it. It will make a difference. If we all do this, it will absolutely make a difference.
Sam, I want to get back to the science of plastic just a little bit and ask, you know, how is this plastic affecting animals and plants that are, you know, in the water, on the oceans, on the lake shores, in the lakes? What are you seeing as an environmental impact?
So on a macro side, right, like I made reference to the whales with their stomachs and lots of animals with their stomachs filled with plastic, with macro debris, and that leads to starvation and dehydration. They stop eating because they think they're full. Water can't migrate across their gastrointestinal tract, and so they dehydrate and they die as a result of that. But of more concern, especially within the Great Lakes, because we find so much of the plastic here is already micro-sized, we don't tend to see those kind of macro impacts. What we are seeing is more on the micro scale, and it goes back to those synthetic chemicals. So we know that those chemicals, these pieces of plastic, have chemicals in them and on them, and we know that those chemicals will migrate off of the plastic and into the organisms, and this includes us. And what we know about these chemicals is that they're endocrine disruptors. That means that they mimic hormones, which can have a wide range impact upon human health, depending upon when you're exposed and what exactly you're exposed to. So, and with regard to human health, we see impacts on certain types of cancer, where we see rising cancer rates, breast cancer, prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, and this is associated with the increase in synthetic chemicals in the environment. We see increases in ADHD and autism. This is, again, is associated with increases in the synthetic chemicals in the environment. We see increases in obesity in children under the age of 6 months. And, you know, this isn't they ate too much fast food and didn't go to the gym, right? This is literally a reprogramming of the DNA, because we know from the moment a child is born, on average, they're already been exposed to 300 different synthetic chemicals. And so it's infiltrating at the very like most fundamental level of humans in with regard to our children. And so we're seeing those impacts happening already.
Now, there was as we mentioned earlier, there's been a great deal of talk about bisphenol A, an industrial chemical that has been used to make certain plastic. There was a recent government study that found it's not nearly as harmful as originally believed. They said they tested it in high quantities in mice, and they just really didn't see any of the outcomes that they has been talked about with bisphenol A in humans and concerns about cancer or ADHD. What do you think?
Well, the high dosage is the important part there. We have this idea that the dose makes the poison, that if you increase the dosage that you're going to see a bigger impact. But there's been several studies, and I think his name is Vondrick. He's at the University of Missouri. He's done incredible work on low-dose studies, specifically with bisphenol A, as well as other endocrine disruptors, and shown that they have a human health impact. You have to remember, bisphenol A was originally created to be a birth control. That's what it was initially created. So, you know, its intention was to mimic hormones. They found that it wasn't as effective as other chemicals as a birth control. But if you think about that, that tells you that it's having, you know, that it was designed for this very specific purpose of being a hormone mimic. And hormones don't work at high dosages. Hormones work at low dosage. That's what they do, you know. And so you really have to be looking at those low dose studies, as opposed to this idea that if we just add more of it and we don't see an impact at high dosage, that means that there's no impact at low dosage. It's not the same.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Rod on the line from Wisconsin. Rod, good morning.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I love public radio. I just got to make that point. I listen to Wisconsin public radio and get you guys in quite a bit, too. But
great.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's educational.
Thanks. What's your comment or question?
I had a question. The bacteria that I've heard about probably since the 80s, because I used to work in Bloomington, and I lived in New Brighton, and then across the Long Lake there, they used to have a armory that was from World War II era, and they had tetracycline in the water, and they said that they had a bacteria that consumed it. And of course, you know, like every organism has to, you know, waste, mm-hmm. and passes gas and that, and they say, well, that's carbon dioxide, you know. So anyhow, the point is, Earth, Mother Earth, I truly believe, will break everything down to its natural state, not at the pace that we like, because it takes so long. But these bacteria, what is there? Is there progress on this?
Bacteria consuming plastic. Got it, Rod. Thanks for your question. Sam, is there a bacteria out there that can break down the plastic even further? Is this a likelihood?
There are organisms that can use plastic as food, and actually within the water, we find them preferentially on the plastic as opposed to what we see in the water or plant debris that we pick out of the water as well. And so you see different colonies that will, you know, that can use plastic as a food. But, this actually kind of connects back to Bonnie's question, too, about this idea of cleanup. And what I want to ask all of our listeners to think about is if they go home today and they walk into their kitchen and find that the kitchen faucet has been left on and the basin has been stopped up and there's water just pouring out over the basin and onto the floor and there's just water everywhere. What is the first thing that you're going to do? The first thing that you're going to do is walk in and turn off the tap, and then you're going to work on cleanup. And the problem is that as humans, we always, you know, I get these questions a lot about what about cleanup? What can we do on the cleanup front? But until we turn off the tap, until we reduce our use of plastic, the idea of cleanup is that has to be second to that. You know, we can't clean up something that is an ongoing and exponentially increasing problem. Mm. And so, yes, there are organisms that can use plastic. And I do fully agree with his point that Mother Earth will clean itself if we give her time. And this will happen. And so on the cleanup front, like, you know, she will take care of herself, but we have to turn off the tap first.
I'd love to spend the rest of this hour talking about some of the ways in which we can reduce consumption of plastic, turn off the tap, as you were saying there. If you have a call or question, if you've actually reduced your plastic consumption or your community has, give us a call with your comment. Tell us your story. You can reach us at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000 or toll free at 1-800-242-2828. We're talking this hour with Emily DeFrisco with the Plastic Pollution Coalition, and Sam Mason is a professor of chemistry. Emily, can you tell us a little bit about what the Plastic Pollution Coalition is, what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, so Plastic Pollution Coalition is a global alliance of individuals, organizations, businesses, policymakers, and we're working toward a world free of plastic pollution and its toxic impacts on humans, animals, waterways, oceans, and the environment.
So when you talk to the public, what do you recommend is like the first initial steps they should take to reduce their plastic consumption?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about kind of some of the big culprits, like single-use plastic water bottles, plastic straws that you get, in your drink at restaurants, and also plastic bags that you may take at the grocery store. So we just encourage people as a first step, just start thinking about going reusable over disposable. Bring your own bag to the market, bring your own drinking straw to the restaurant if you need one, and bring your own water bottle with you.
And what sort of response are you seeing? Are you seeing change when you look at plastic consumption, it's at such a massive scale. I mean, if you just go out to a food court on any given lunch hour, the amount of plastic that's going into the trash cans over the course of an hour and then multiply that by all the food courts around the nation. It seems pretty overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. I mean, plastic is everywhere. Everywhere you look, we use plastic in so many ways in our lives. And that's why we just are trying to get people to start thinking about single-use plastic and eliminating that. And at the same time, even though plastic pollution is all around us and plastic is everywhere, the movement is growing in such exciting ways. I mean, there have been so many really cool things that have happened where people are coming together and demanding change in their communities. there was, you know, a viral video of a sea turtle with a plastic straw in its nose. And that was kind of one of the first times that I think people started thinking about, where does this plastic go? Where is it ending up? Like I said, you know, earlier, like, there is no way. And like Sam said, you know, visit your local landfill. There, the plastic is going somewhere. It's, we're in this mindset of like, oh, I can just take something, use it, throw it away. I never have to worry about it again. But it is in our environment years and years and years later. So start thinking about what you can do and to go reusable over disposable.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jeff on the line in Minneapolis. Jeff, thanks for joining the conversation.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I'm a part of a faith community in Minneapolis that has had a very active environmental ministry for a number of years. And we've been able to be successful in being a zero waste campus. And we know now that certainly we've done a good job of recycling plastic, but we know that the next step is to, as you said, turning off the tap, is to work to get parishioners to take a pledge that they will they will no longer use plastic and water bottles or plastic bags or single use. So this is getting underway right now, and we want to have a web-based sign up on our church website and be able to do it in a way that we can tabulate names and have those public for other parishioners to see, and then have links to ongoing resources for people to help understand this and know what more they can do after they take on the big three of bottles, bags, and single-use plastic.
Jeff, that sounds fabulous. Thanks so much for calling. Emily, is this a common sort of, are you seeing more communities banding together to work on this problem?
Absolutely. People all over the world are, you know, fed up with seeing plastic pollution in their local, you know, in their streets, in their communities, on their playgrounds, and they are coming together and saying, we don't want to see this anymore. We want to reduce the plastic pollution that we see. And I think that's so, so exciting, and we absolutely applaud your efforts.
Sam, our caller mentioned Jeff mentioned the recycling of plastics and going beyond that. And I think it's interesting that a lot of people, you know, we do the right thing. We put the plastic in the recyclable container. We think, oh, we've done so good. We don't have to worry about what's happening to that piece of plastic because it's being recycled. But isn't it true that different types of plastic have different lifespans, how many times they can be recycled? I mean, what happens to plastic once it is recycled? What happens next?
Well, plastic is actually a really difficult material to recycle. In fact, we don't really say it's recycled. It's typically downcycled. And this is because of the fact that plastic, I mean, unlike glass, you know, glass is silicon dioxide by and large. And there are different types of glass, but by and large, you buy a glass container, it's silicon dioxide. That's all it is, right? Aluminum can is aluminum and the element, right? That's all it is. And so it's easy to recycle those, but plastic is not one thing. It's literally, I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of different plastics out there. And so that makes recycling it exceedingly difficult to do. And it goes back to the fact that it's a mixture. So that makes it really hard. So typically you put a plastic in a recycling bin, it goes to a facility where they break it into to one of those different numbers on the bottom, right? So polyethylene terephthalate, high density polyethylene, low density polyethylene. Those don't really get to all that tells you about the polymer. It doesn't tell you about all the components. So the reality is, right, in order for something to be recycled, there has to be a market for it. Somebody has to be willing to buy and use that post-consumer plastic. And most often what happens is if it's quote unquote recycled, it's typically downcycled. It's turned from a bottle into the lining of a jacket or the lining of a sleeping bag or a park bench.
It's upcycled to me, from a plastic bottle to go to the lining of a jacket.
Well, the problem is, though, is that once that product is used, what happens to it? If that park bench breaks, what happens to the park bench? Then it goes to the landfill, right? It's most often, if plastic is quote unquote recycled, it's recycled one time. That's it. And that it ends up in a landfill. That's not true recycling. A glass jar can become a glass jar for infinity. it never, you know, that's true recycling. When you can turn it back into a product over and over and over again, that's recycling. And plastic is typically used one more time before it ends up in a landfill. So that's why we call it downcycling.
Mm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Al on the line in Eden Prairie. Welcome, Al.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for waiting.
Couple of really quick ones. First of all, are we going to go, and if everything works out like your guests are talking, kind of back to the future? I mean, back to the 50s and 60s where we've got returnable pop bottles? Second question is, I've been hearing stories about how this plastic is in plastic water bottles that have been coming from, you know, places like Nestle or whoever, which is already filtered. So how can a filtered water have plastic in it after it's been filtered? Do they not clean the bottles up good enough? And the third thing, if you could just touch on it quickly, is we are very concerned about, you know, plastic in the environment, but we also care about safety. You know, you think about the 7 layers you've got over the Tylenol packages and, you know, keeping bacteria out of our food. So it's going to be a real tough road to hoe to eliminate it, but what are your guest thoughts?
Okay, great, Al. Let's see if I can remember all those questions and go through them one by one. So first off, is it feasible to go back to using glass for all the things that we're used to using plastic for now? Emily?
Yeah, I think we are absolutely seeing a resurgence of, you know, we call it the refill revolution, if you will, refilling glass bottles or steel bottles. And we're already seeing this in different areas of the U.S. and in the U.K. There's been this kind of return of milk delivery. People are getting their milk delivered to their homes in glass bottles. Then you put the bottles back out, or you take the bottles back to your store, and they're sterilized and reused. And it's very exciting, and it's a great way to go. And instead of just, you know, taking your plastic bottle and disposing of it, you refill that glass bottle as many times as you can.
Now, so I just want to clarify, because I know a lot of people are thinking, well, heck, milk comes in a carton, what's the big deal? But that carton, isn't it lined with a very thin layer of plastic? Am I right?
Yes. If you're buying the kind of Tetra Pak, the paper carton of milk, that is probably better than a plastic bottle, but it does have it's a layer of paper and then a layer of plastic on the inside, and that can be very difficult to recycle. Okay. So glass is the best choice there.
And Sam, so if filtered water with plastic showing up, how did it make it through the filter?
Yeah. So we did the two studies. They did a tap water study, which showed an average of 5.5 particles of plastic per liter. And then we did as a follow-up, we did the bottled water study, which, looking at the same size fraction, showed over 10 particles of plastic per liter. So twice as much as what we saw in the bottled water, I mean, in the tap water. What was interesting about the bottled water study was that the particles that we found in the bottled water were largely fragments, whereas in the tap water was largely fibers. And that tells you there's a difference in the source. And specifically, we looked at the types of plastic that those particles were. And by and large, it was polypropylene, which happens to be the same plastic that is used to make the bottle cap. So it actually, as Al pointed out or asked, do they not clean out the bottles? Well, I don't think that there's any cleaning of bottles that's happening before they're filled. You know, so and we did find particles that also are associated with the bottle itself, polyethylene and polyethylene terephthalate, as well as polystyrene. So it looks like it's the actual act of packaging the water that's causing the particles to be within the bottled water itself, and way more plastic within bottled water than what we saw in tap water.
Mm. And back to you, Emily. The third and final question was around safety. And you know, we often use plastics as a protective covering for products to make sure that they're not contaminated in any way. So how do we do that without plastics?
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely, that's a great question. And I have 3 little children. They're 5, 3, and 1. So I absolutely use, you know, the Tylenol bottles that are little plastic bottles. And I think we have to think about, you know, what is a good use of plastic and what is a poor use, a misuse of plastic. And obviously in the, you know, medicine field and plumbing, there's other like good uses of plastic. Although I will say at my local pharmacy, there is infant Advil available in a glass bottle. So you can always kind of ask around and look around and see what may be available to you. but just start thinking about, you know, what is a good use of plastic and what is a misuse of this resource that is a limited resource that we have. So just start thinking about that in your daily life and what you can do to refuse single-use plastics when possible and, you know, use reusable containers when possible.
Are there concerns about the recycling of glass and the environmental impact of that and how that's done? Either of you? Or is that just not your wheelhouse?
Well, it's not. But I mean, typically, you know, glass, you know, is typically broken and then melted down and then recycled. But, you know, glass ultimately is sand, right? And so they're not really kind of concerned about kind of an environmental impact of that because it really is a natural material. The environmental concern with associated with plastic is because of the fact that it's synthetic. It's not natural. You know, it's a man-made substance that nature doesn't know kind of how to deal with it.
Hmm. Let's go to the phones. Let's go. We've got Ron on the line in Coon Rapids. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just coming back from grocery as I was listening to it, and just very recently we stopped using plastic bags, so I just kind of carried my grocery with a regular bag.
What kind of regular bag? A paper bag? A canvas bag?
No, it's a canvas bag, so we use it all the time. So.
Great.
Yep. So the question I have is, we have a lot of plastic bags in the house. What do I do with them? Anything can be done? I kind of heard the answer. It's very difficult to recycle, but just wanted to hear if there's anything additional.
Okay. Ron, thanks for that. So Emily, he's got these plastic bags from his previous life when he consumed plastic.
Right.
What does he do with them to be, to do the right thing?
Yeah, I would say, you know, thank you for thinking of that and thank you for thinking about this and what you're going to do with it. Many supermarkets have at the front of the store soft plastic recycling where you can put your single-use plastic bags. And again, like Sam said, they will likely be, downcycled into another item. So it's better than throwing them in the landfill, throwing them in the trash, and eventually they reach landfill. So try for that. Ask if you can't find it, ask someone at the supermarket. And then if you don't have that available to you, I would say use them for whatever you can in order to get a second life out of them.
Mm. You know, we've had several callers wondering about when they take their dogs for walks, what should they do to pick up the waste? Is there a better option than the plastic bag or the biodegradable plastic bag that's going to end up in a trash can when it's supposed to be going in a compost pile? Emily?
Yeah, I mean, I have a dog as well, and I live in the city. It is absolutely a challenge. There are some creative options that you can think about. There's kind of like the little scooper, the metal scoop you can carry with you if that's an option for you, or a paper bag. There's lots of creative options. You just have to kind of start thinking about that.
I can hear a lot of people going, ooh, paper bag. That doesn't seem like it's going to go very well.
I know. So you just have to do whatever is going to work for you and your family. But just the fact that you're thinking about that and thinking about dog waste and how to pick it up and how to reduce your use of plastics, we applaud that. So thank you.
Sam, this is more a philosophical question, but the fact that, you know, we're talking about having to stop stop the flow of plastic into the environment, and we're, you know, talking about this on a one-on-one personal use level, is that really the right way to go about this? Would it be more effective for legislation to affect our behavior, and is that likely to happen?
Well, I mean, I think the reality is this is going to take a multifaceted approach, right? Starting with the starting point of on a personal level, there's 7 billion people on this planet, you know? So every time you're thinking about the change that you're making and does that have an impact, multiply the change you're making by 7 billion. And then obviously that can have a huge impact, right? If you just use one plastic bag a day, well, if every person on this planet uses only one plastic bag a day, that's 7 billion plastic bags a day that are being used and multiply that by 365 days a year. So I think what we do on an individual level has a tremendous impact on what we find in the environment. But that does not mean that that's the only kind of piece of this. Legislation absolutely has a place, right? The Microbeads Free Water Act that becomes fully effective in July of this year, I think is going to have a huge impact on finding microbeads in the water, right? Because they're no longer going to be in our products that wash down the drain. As Emily pointed out earlier, right, a number of places have imposed these fees on plastic bags, and that has a tremendous impact on what we see in the environment. As the recent UK study pointed out, they're seeing less plastic in the water because of the fee that's being imposed on land. So I think legislation absolutely has a part of this as well. And I think industry has a role in this as well, is that they can start thinking about what they can do in terms of their products and how to package their products in a way that doesn't use synthetic plastic materials.
Mm. I'm wearing a jacket that has fleece on it right now, and I'm now thinking about the next time I go to wash it, what should I do? So for those of us who were looking around at our possessions with maybe a keener eye right now, any recommendations on how we should change our behavior with that clothing? Or is there any way to keep it the microplastic from getting into the water in the washing machine?
Well, there, one, you can wash things less, but I understand that obviously you always need to wash things eventually. But there are things out there like, I think it's called the Coraball, and there's similar that are made by different manufacturer that you throw into your washing machine, and they collect some of the microfibers. Now, they're not going to be fully effective, but you work on that. There's another place where legislation can come in, or industry can just come forward and say, you know what, there used to be filters on washing machines the same way that you have a filter on your dryer. Maybe we need to go back to that and start putting a filter in your washing machine. So you add the Coraball with a filter on your washing machine with filtration that happens in the wastewater treatment plant, and that can dramatically affect how many microfibers are being released through our wastewater into our waterways.
Emily DeFrisco, we have just a minute left here. I'm wondering what you recommend folks do, the consumers out there, if they want more information, resources, to try and change their plastic
consumption. Yeah, so we have a wonderful website, plasticpollutioncoalition.org. Come to our website. We have a new healthy baby guide that's on our website that's available for anyone thinking about, you know, your young family.
We didn't even get to talking around kids' toys. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a section of the guide that's all about kids' toys. It's very challenging for kids' products. You know, so much is plastic. So come to our website. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, pretty much all the social networks. And we share just easy tips to reduce your use of plastic, refuse single-use plastic, and also how to kind of, as Sam was saying, hold companies accountable for the products that they create. It's not just on us to solve the plastic pollution problem. We need companies to stand up and make better products. And we also, you know, there's also a lot of opportunities on our website. We have a Take Action Center where you can kind of sign, add your name to different petitions to add a plastic bag ban in your community or town. So come visit us, and thank you.
Thanks to both of you for this hour of conversation. Obviously, we got a lot we can still talk about, but really appreciate your expertise and taking the time out this morning. We've been talking with Emily DeFrisco with the Plastic Pollution Coalition. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
And we've also been talking with Sam Mason. She's a professor of chemistry and chair of the Department of Geology and Environmental Sciences at the State University of New York at Fredonia. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Marianne Combs. Thanks for listening.